Fred
tells this story about a time he was at church with his family. I had an afternoon engagement and I had to leave early. I said goodbye to my family after the benediction, and in order to get to the parking lot quickly, I cut through the back, through the choir room. I said to one of the women in the choir as she was putting away her robe, "I appreciated very much the anthem this morning." She said, "I hope so, because that's it." I said, "What do you mean?" She said, "That's it, I'm hanging it up." I said, "Are you retiring?" She'd been in the choir for 103 or 104 years, so I thought she was retiring. She said, "No, I'm quitting." "You're quitting?" She said, "I'm quitting." "Oh, you're not quitting." "I'm quitting." "Well, why are you quitting?" She said, "I sat up there in the choir loft this morning and looked around at the other choir members. I looked at the minister and the worship leader. I looked at the ushers. I looked at the entire congregation. And finally, I said to myself, what has haunted me for years?" "What's that?" She said, "Nobody cares. Nobody cares." Well, I was in a hurry, so I said, "Oh, you'll be all right. Take an aspirin. You got a headache, all right?" I went to the parking lot, but all the way on my drive, I thought about that indictment. I was a member of that church, and she was indicting me and all the members. In fact, if it were true what she had said, then this was not a church at all. When I got home that afternoon, I called the lady. I said, "I want to talk to you." She said, "If you want to." I said, "I want to." I went over there, we talked, and brusquely we disagreed. I finally asked her, "Well, what would we have to do to show that we cared?" And this was her definition. She said, "Take me seriously." That was a strange way to put it, especially for her, because she was a kind of comic. She would always be playing practical jokes. She'd pin tails of choir robes together. She'd go early to put some big cartoon on the pulpit so that when the minister came out in all his sobriety, he'd look down and be blown out of the water. I said, "You can't be serious. Take you seriously? You're always joking and laughing." And she said, "You bought all that? I like to be taken seriously." Well, I left the lady's house. I said to her, "You're wrong, you're wrong." And she said, "I'm not." I said, "I know that in our church there are people who care for each other. They take care of each other. Who and where exactly?" she said. There are many ways in which people in the church show care for one another. There are many ways in which people in the church fall short and demonstrate lack of care. Today, I want to talk about friendship as one way of caring. Friendship's a word we might use a bit more in the church environment. Here in Philadelphia, many of us have strong relationships and resonance with Quakers. Perhaps in the city, brotherly and sisterly love, the term friend takes a more unique connotation than elsewhere. I believe from the founding of this congregation in 1865, people found resonance and value in Quaker language and ideas. Quakers commonly call their communities societies of friends. Now, not many, I actually want to do the research on this, but my belief is clearly not many Unitarian Universalist congregations around the country have society in their name. And I believe the selection of the name, the Unitarian Society of Germantown, reflected Quaker influence. Respectfully and with some amount of devotion, I encourage us to more commonly think and talk about ourselves as a society of friends or a beloved community of friends. I'm not as keen on the word society these days, but that's another sermon, perhaps. I'm not saying we should pretend artificial bonds of friendship. I'm not saying we should focus friendship only on people in the church. Quite the opposite. I'm saying together we can help practice and strengthen the friendship muscles for living our lives within and outside the USG community. I think we do that in many ways and could be a little more explicit. We benefit when we offer a sense of friendship that involves understanding and a willingness to open. The friendship I'm talking about, and maybe the woman quitting the choir was talking about, involves interacting with a palpable sense of kindness. Dr. Saki Santarelli works with cancer patients. In group settings, Dr. Santarelli says he often sees a sense of friendship develop, that's his word, and he describes it as a lessening of constriction, a palpable sense of self-kindness, a gradual release from cycles of denial, justification, guilt, and condemnation. We need friendship as much as ever. And that may seem ironic in a Facebook world. Founded and headquartered in the United States, Facebook connects approximately 1.35 billion people every month. 1.35 billion people every month. Each person averages over 300 friends. Of the 1.35 billion people, each averages over 300 friends. At the same time, people living in the United States, Facebook headquarters, have fewer intimate friends. By certain ways of defining it, including the definition of spending time in person with one another. Many factors are at play. Rising age of first marriage, divorce rate of approximately 50%, and life expectancy at an all-time high all lead towards a need for friendship. The American Psychological Association has many studies published. I find them fascinating to read. They involve, a number of them involve conglomerates of studies with hundreds of thousands of participants in the studies. One study with almost 200,000 people says people's personal and friendship networks have shrunk over the last 35 years. Another study with over 300,000 people involved, run by Brigham Young, psychologists found that people with stronger social relationships are 50% more likely to live throughout the study's period. And people with weaker friendship connections have as much risk to death as if somebody just smoked 15 cigarettes a day. This stuff really matters. It's not just if you want a friend to go to the movies with, which does matter as well, but it's more than that. And I'll bet, if we're honest, every single person in this room could admit that making friends can be very difficult. You move to a new town, it can take years to have any kind of bonds with anybody. Friendships fall out of favor. People move, people die, you get these huge disagreements over something that you have to stop the friendship because of, blah, blah, blah. It goes on, you gotta start over. How do we handle these ups and downs? I think it's helpful to think of this as a spiritual practice of giving and receiving. Knowing many times that the giving and receiving don't balance out, do not balance out. You may be frustrated that you seem to make many offers and efforts with limited amounts of reciprocity. People just don't reach back. I've asked that person 3 times. He or she hasn't asked me at all to do something. That's tough. That's not made up difficult. That can be difficult. Feelings can be hurt. You may feel guilty. You owe many people a call back or an email, or they invited us. We didn't invite them to something. Stressful. Perhaps a mindful approach of taking it one day at a time, one effort at a time, is a way to come at it. Perhaps what Fred did in calling the fellow member of his church was a good act of friendship. Perhaps Fred should follow up and talk more with this lady, but maybe not. Maybe that was just an act of friendship. They don't have to become best friends or longtime friends. Maybe that was an act of friendship, and that's why with integrity we can use the word here in this community. Doesn't mean we're all best friends, but we're friends. Maybe that's the definition. And I'm lifting up today that receiving can be just as difficult, as, if not more difficult, than making the effort of friendship. Hence the woman speaking up in the first place about her concerns of people in the church not caring was an act of friendship to Fred. And saying, yeah, you can come over. And opening her door and letting him in was an act of friendship. And like I said, maybe they should continue, maybe not. Maybe they just did that act of friendship together. So in this friendship connection, conversation, I want to talk about the role of the minister. And I'm a little nervous because I've been thinking about this a lot. Some of my colleagues believe and declare that ministers should not be friends with their congregations. Some of my colleagues say, I'm not friends with my congregation. That would be an inappropriate use of the role of the minister. And I do come from a different school. There are different schools on this. The ministers on the staff always talk about it over the years. I have always gratefully accepted in my heart and acted as part of the community of friends here. And I talk like that, and I use the word sometimes. Possibly, I believe at times I overemphasize that. Maybe you could say, I was thinking of how to explain this in the pulpit, maybe I was too chummy. Like, just wanted to use a British word there, but I think it's good. You know, at barbecues or at the grocery store, and maybe what that did was relegate the role of minister to the side too much, and then sometimes, whether it was conscious or not, some people might have been thinking, where's the minister? We have a good friend, I mean, Kent, but where's the minister? I've worried if I played that wrong sometimes. And the good news about friendships is we get to learn together, right? We get to be student and teacher together. So I'm learning now as an old man, 50-year-old minister, 16 years here. I'm learning and getting better. So I want to be in that conversation with you about how I can be the minister, a minister, and a friend. And we just keep going on with these ambivalences and paradoxes, ambiguities of learning in life together. Stephen Batchelor's somebody I've been reading lately. He's a Buddhist thinker who talks about friendships, and some of his ideas really work for what I think we're talking about here in coffee hour or in small group ministries. We're not seeking perfection in friends, but rather a heartfelt acceptance of imperfection in each other. Heartfelt acceptance of imperfection in each other. That's a friend. In the choir, in the committee meetings, in our justice gatherings, true friends seek not to coerce us, even gently or reasonably, into believing what we're unsure of. Friends are like midwives who draw forth what is waiting to be born. That makes sense. A friend who's a midwife. I also need to mention that it's valuable practicing befriending yourself. Many of us have been on fool's errands for months or years of our lives, looking for love in all the wrong places when all we needed to do was practice finding and giving love to ourselves. Befriend yourself. Maybe this week you could try some activity to be as your best friend. Have an artist date where you go engage with something of beauty or do something creative. Maybe just sit with your breath as a best friend who you cherish being with. Friendship is about widening the circle. Friendship is about stepping into the circle. It's good to include others. It's good to take a risk and step in. It's good to include yourself. Let's be friends. Blessings be. Amen.